Application Academy is closing if you are applying to medical school in 2024 to start in 2025. We are closing in mid-April, April 12th or 13th, somewhere around there, somewhere in mid-April. We're closing our door. It's time for you to get in to Application Academy to get the support you need to put together your story so that you aren't one of those students that end up rejected because you didn't know how to tell your story. Come join us at applicationacademy.com. Use the promo code podcast for a little extra discount. Use the promo code podcast for a little extra discount. I'll see you soon at applicationacademy.com. The pre-med path can be super confusing. If you'd love some help on your path or on your applications, use the promo code PMY for pre-med years, PMY, over at medicalschoolhq.net and get some help from some of our experts, former directors of admissions, admissions officers, other experts. We have a small team ready to help you today. Again, that's promo code PMY to get a discount on our services at medicalschoolhq.net. If you're applying to medical school in 2022 to start medical school in 2023, join me Wednesday or Thursday, Wednesday night at 9:30 p.m. Eastern or Thursday at 11 a.m. Eastern at premedworkshop.com. Go register today. I'm going to show you how to tell your story in your application. Again, that's premedworkshop.com. If you are applying to medical school in 2022, be there or be square. The Medical School HQ Podcast, session number 99. Yeah, 99.
Hey, this is Z-Dog MD, rapper, physician, legendary turntable health revolutionary, and part-time gardener. And you're listening to the Medical School HQ Podcast, hosted by the irredeemably awesome Ryan Gray.
Hello and welcome to the Medical School Headquarters Podcast, where we believe that collaboration, not competition, is key to your pre-med success. I am your host, Dr. Ryan Gray, and in this podcast, we share with you stories, encouragement, and information that you need to know to help you on your path to becoming a successful physician. Session 99. That's crazy. We're one away from 100 episodes. Now, it's not quite a two-year anniversary. Obviously, there's 52 weeks in a year, so 104 episodes will be our two-year official anniversary. But there's just something about the number 100. I want to thank everybody for being here today, especially my lovely co-host, Allison Gray.
Hello.
If you're listening to us for the first time, you have a lot of catching up to do. Almost 2 years worth of podcasts to go listen to right now. Ready, go. You can subscribe to us, get our shows for free, downloaded to your phone, to your computer, magically overnight on Wednesday or during the day Wednesday when we release them. You can go subscribe for free in iTunes at medicalschoolhq.net/iTunes. You can listen on Stitcher, which is medicalschoolhq.net/Stitcher. And you can listen on SoundCloud. We're slowly getting all of our content up into SoundCloud as well, for those of you that like SoundCloud. But today, we're going to talk about an email that came in and asked about family life and being a physician. And we've covered this topic a little bit with different guests, but Allison and I are going to share our stories and our thoughts on having a family and being a physician. And we're still getting used to this whole parenting game and working as physicians. And so we're going to share our thoughts on the whole process and what it's like. But first, I want to remind you, if you're getting ready to take the MCAT, go to freemcatgift.com. Again, that's freemcatgift.com and download our 30-plus page report all about tips and tricks and things that you might not think about on how to maximize your score on the MCAT. Now I'm going to read this email and Allison and I will talk about it. So it came from Thomas, who said the only thing he's ever wanted to do was be a physician. It sounds like he's a non-traditional student. because he's saying he's getting older. Hopefully he's not just talking about like being a junior in undergrad. But he says, my question is, how do you balance such an incredible workload with a family life, especially with a newborn? He's obviously listened to some of our shows. How have you had any struggles with this? Is there any one specialty that is more lax or quote unquote family friendly than another? So let's tackle this, Allison.
Mm-hmm.
How you doing, by the way?
I'm good.
I didn't ask you how
you're doing. I'm doing well, rather. Thank you. How are you tonight?
I'm doing well. Thank you. You didn't get to say hello, everybody.
Yeah, well, I try to mix it up.
Oh, okay. Good.
Sometimes I just say hello.
Awesome. So I thought we'd tackle this from a kind of systematic standpoint about each step of the process and what it's like to have family at each step. Obviously, we didn't have a child until we were attendings, basically. So we are kind of out of the training world. But we can talk about workloads and what the time commitments were like, and we saw friends go through the process with family. Mm-hmm. And so we can kind of talk to each one of those, and we'll go from there.
Yeah, and it's great because then if you are at one stage of the process and maybe not as interested in hearing about another stage, you can tune in and we'll go very systematically, chronologically.
Chronologically. So obviously the first step of the game is the pre-med world. And we can talk non-traditional as well, because you're technically a pre-med as a non-traditional, and you're getting your credits just as a traditional student was, maybe a little bit slower, maybe in a little bit of a different environment. But in your mind, when you were going through the pre-med process, what kind of time commitment was school for you? And thinking back, could you imagine, or did you know anybody that had children at that point?
Good question. Well, and our experiences and stories and reflections are going to be so different, because I was at a school in Canada, you were at a school in the US, which are just by nature two very different universities. And yeah, so it'll just be different. So that's good. So I'm going first?
Yeah.
All right, let's see. So for starters, I started college or university when I was 17. I was really ready for school when I was 4. So,
and
no, there's this picture of me when we were, this is just kind of a cute story. When we were in school and we were 5 years old, this was kindergarten, I think, or it might've been first grade. Anyway, the point is we had a picture where we held up a little sign saying something that we loved. We just had to pick something that we loved and write it down and hold up a sign. So there's a picture of me.
I want to, like, most kids maybe had like a puppy or a kitten or their mommy or dad or brother or sister.
Right. And mine said, I love school.
She's a neurologist,
yep,
people.
Yep, yep. So, but no, it's true. So in my town growing up, I grew up in Brookline in Massachusetts. Yay, Brookline. Love that town. The school regulations were that if you were turning 5 by, I think, December, you were able to start kindergarten. So instead of keeping me in preschool, my parents said, okay, I had a year of preschool, off to school you go, because I was so excited and eager to get there. I then therefore started college when I was 17. So I was young, and I was also going to school in a different country, and Canada, there are dear friends up north, and the culture, some might think, is, oh, it's just Canada, it's just, you know, the northern United States. It's really not, and Canadians will attest to this. It's a different culture. It's a different, it's different. We share a lot of similarities, but I will tell you, living in Montreal, French Canada, it's a very different culture. And people ask me, did you go abroad in college? And I say, well, I felt like I was abroad. So I was in school with really all young people. I mean, I don't know anybody at that time who had children, to answer your question, Ryan. Everybody was about that age, was 17, 18. And
are you saying 17 and 18 year olds can't have babies?
No, but having a baby and being at McGill was, I don't know how you would do that, yeah, quite frankly. I mean, so my
okay,
next.
So that's your answer.
Yeah. So my answer is because, and again, it'll be interesting to hear what Ryan's college life was like. But for me, I went to McGill, and McGill is very much in the European sort of school of thought that it's very it's very self-driven. And I remember very vividly the dean of science getting up at the beginning of our college career and saying, look, you know, he held out a bunny hat and he said, like a magician would, and he said, you know, I'm going to put my hand in this hat. And then he said, who thinks I'm going to get a bunny out of it? And people would raise their hand, and then some people didn't. And he said, and then he took his hand out and he said, well, there's no bunny. And people said, why? And he said, because I didn't put anything in. So his whole point was, if you don't put anything in, you're not getting anything out. And it was very much at McGill, sink or swim. Everything you got out of your college career was what you put into it. And there was nobody there to sort of hold your hand. There weren't, I mean, you had an advisor assigned to you, but it was very much, here is your schedule. Good luck to you. We'll see you in 4 years. And that worked for me because I was a very ambitious, very, I loved school. I was super excited to be studying and be there. And I was in science classes, which I was very excited about having. I really loved AP Bio, and I was pretty sure I was moving toward a career in medicine. Even at that point, I was really, I picked human physiology even my first year. That was what I wanted to pursue. Anyhow, so McGill, my point is, it was a very, very rigorous environment. And I vividly remember pretty much, I mean, a very high percentage of my weekends at McGill were spent studying. And I mean all weekend. I mean, you would get up on the weekend, I'd have breakfast with my roommate. We lived in a dorm the first year, and then we lived in an apartments in Montreal for the next 3 years. And literally we would get up in the morning and have breakfast, maybe watch a little bit of TV, and then that was it. You were showered, you were off to the library, or in your, I love to study at home, so, and that was it all day. And then, you know, you'd eat, you'd do your thing. And at night, yes, I mean, we did have somewhat of a college experience. We'd go out, but again, in Montreal, drinking age is 18. So we'd go out to the bar, or we just, you know, have a drink. And some nights we wouldn't. Some nights we would just study.
Definitely all weekend,
particularly around midterms and definitely finals. Forget it. I mean, that was what you did. So it sounds maybe to some of you out there who are in high school or college, like, oh my God, like what the hell?
Or to me
or to you. But I will tell you that while I did not have the sort of traditional college experience, and probably in some ways you could say that I missed out on some of that, you know, meaning the traditional American college experience, American United States college experience, because I wasn't tailgating. I wasn't going to a lot of dorm parties. I mean, I remember sitting in the hallway with friends and doing typical college things in some way, but it was very different. It was just a different, we went clubbing because that's what you did in Montreal. It wasn't about having like a big kegger. You would go to the club and like just dance and do stuff. So just different. Anyway, I'm going on and on, but I'm reliving my college days. Jeez. So it was just a different life. But my point was, it prepared me very, very well for medical school. Because what did we do every weekend in medical school?
Sleep.
Study.
Oh, yeah. We did that too.
So that was me. So yeah. Family life?
So none.
Really none. Yeah,
no time.
But as a last thing before we switch gears to you, there were definitely students, Quebecois students, who were from Montreal, who were in school there and didn't live.
You want to translate Quebecois?
Quebecois. So students who are from Quebec. Montreal is part of Quebec. It's in the province Quebec. Anyhow, so there were students, and one of whom I knew fairly well, and she lived with her family in Montreal, and she was a student, and she would commute. So she had family life in a different way, right? She was still living with her family, you know, as some people do who are commuters in the States. So
she had support. She wasn't supporting.
Correct. Exactly. Yeah. She was
a little
still
different.
She was still a dependent. She was not,
depended upon.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. So, you know, it was nice in the sense that her food was there. Her laundry was there. Yeah.
Okay. So I think everybody's pre-med, traditional pre-med path will be similar to yours. Yes, the studying was probably, or most likely, a lot more rigorous at McGill compared to where I went, at University of Florida, which is always seems to be ranked as a relatively high party school. McGill probably isn't. McGill's always ranked high academically. University of Florida is too.
And yeah, you always hate that. You hate seeing when Florida's ranked as a party school because you know that it's a good academic environment too.
It is both. It is both. Yeah. So I think what ultimately we're we're both in agreement that pre-med, a traditional pre-med path, while not rigorous like medical school, can be hard. And depending on the type of student you are, how much time you need to study for a test, or if you're a good crammer or whatever it may be, it's going to be hard to raise a child and have a family as a traditional pre-med student. But what about a non-traditional student? So a lot of people that listen to this podcast are non-traditional students, and their situation might be a lot different. They might have a family, have a career, and then go, you know what? I'm out of here. I want to go be a doctor and follow my initial dreams and passions and go to medical school. And that, again, is another totally different situation, because typically, and we've heard all of these stories of people going to night school at a community college to get their pre-med, their prereqs, going and switching gears and going back to undergrad and kind of piecing together a do-it-yourself post-bac or going to a post-bac with children. But I think it's different in my mind, because there's some sense of stability because you're there with a family already. As a traditional pre-med student, you're still a kid.
Right, and your priorities are different. So when you're in college, for a lot of people, it's your first time away from home. It's your first time it's your first time that you can experiment with different things. And I don't mean
drugs and alcohol.
I don't mean that. But I mean, well, and for 18-year-olds who were at McGill, I mean, I will tell you, I was never a big drinker. I just wasn't.
Good to know.
But I'm just saying, a lot of people got there and would be like, wow, there are beer Olympics on campus. This is awesome. I mean,
what are beer Olympics?
Basically, you would all get together. I don't know, because I never went. Okay. I was pretty much, I was upstairs studying probably. But people would get together on the grass in the middle of campus, and they'd have tents up and ice sculptures and big, like, what are those things called? Oh my God. Where you pour alcohol down. Ice luge? No.
Funnels.
Funnels. Yeah.
Not a big drinker.
And people would just go nuts, and they would have games where people would try to win, and it was all about alcohol. But this was campus endorsed, because this is Canada. It's just different. So
the high school students that are listening, David, you in particular, ignore everything we're saying.
No, seriously, ignore it. But I didn't participate in any of it. And, I'm not saying you had to. The point is, though, for some people, when you get to college, your priorities are, oh, I want to have fun. I'm with all these young people. I want to. And part of the real challenge is staying focused in your classes, right? Now, if you're a non-traditional student and you have a family and you have two children at home, or one child and you're married and you have a significant other, and you have a job from 9 to 5 or whatever your hours are, you are going to be no nonsense.
Yep.
If you're going to be getting your studies done because you're trying to do your prereqs, it is no nonsense. Yes, it is. You are focused.
And that's something back in session 61, which you can listen to at medicalschoolhq.net/61. That's something that came out talking to Rebecca, who is a fourth year medical student now and has 3 kids, if I remember correctly. But she went through the pre-med path with those kids as well. And she's a non-traditional student. And she talks about that, about cutting out basically all the fat in her life, kind of figuratively, and focusing on what was the most important to her and only doing those things. So medicalschoolhq.net/61, you can hear that great story with Rebecca.
And I think part of it too, Ryan, is that a lot of people, us included, don't necessarily always appreciate how many hours there are in the day, because you think, okay, well,
there are a lot.
I have such and such time. Let's say you work 9 to 5 like we do now, and then you go home. We'll talk about this in a bit, but there really are quite a number of hours at the end of the day. If you really tackle each of those hours as though they are crucial to getting things done, it's very different than, oh yeah, I I'm busy all day, and then at night, I make dinner, and there's a lot of time in there.
So you mentioned getting things done, and this is a book that I've read, and I know I've suggested it to you to read before, and you haven't tackled it yet, but I'm actually going to reread it here pretty soon, so maybe we'll read it together. But if you're listening to this and you're wondering, how can I get better at juggling all of these commitments and everything that I have to do, go read the book Getting Things Done by David Allen. As we're recording this, it's October 2014. He's actually coming out with his second edition. This is a book that's been around for 15 or 20 years. And he's coming out with a second edition in... No, it's been around 10 years. Anyway, he's coming out with a second edition in March of 2015. So if you're listening to this around then, hopefully you can get the second edition. But I wouldn't delay it. Get it now. Read it. It's a relatively easy read. But it's an awesome book about changing your thinking and giving you some tips and tricks on how to prioritize everything in your life.
Yeah, that's great advice. And I do need to read that book. One other thing I'll just mention too, before we move on to the med school years, is that part of what's important, I think, is looking carefully at what your program is going to be like. So let's say you're in high school and you're thinking about college and you're looking through some of the course syllabi that a school offers. And let's say you have an interest maybe in physiology or biochemistry or something science, human science related. Take a look at what, because oftentimes the colleges will show you what does a freshman year, what does a sophomore year, what does a junior year, senior year look like, and you can get a feel for it. So at McGill, for example, it was all science, and that was part of what made it challenging. It was, I was taking in my junior year, you know, physiology, intermediate level physiology. I was taking integrative neuroscience. I was taking courses that were really rigorous and intense. And as I've said in other episodes, I did not have to take any English if I didn't want to. I sort of insisted upon it for myself. I took a history course. I took English because I didn't want to forget how to speak English or write in English. But that was part of why I had such sort of lack of balance in my life, I think, because it was so much science and so many rigorous courses just back to back to back. And so I think that's something just to make note of. Now, if you're a non-traditional student and you're trying to pack all those in and get them done, one of the things that people do to try to deal with some of that back-to-backness, because that's what you're kind of faced with if you're doing a job 9-to-5 and then you need to bang out those prereqs. But one of the things Ryan and I get asked a lot is, well, can I just do one class here and then next semester I'll do one class? And part of the tricky thing about that is that, again, don't forget, as a pre-med, you need to show medical schools that you can handle multiple rigorous classes in the same semester. Because fast forward to medical school, it's drinking from the fire hose. You're going to be doing just studying, taking in information at light speed. Anyway.
You're the Trekkie. You should know this.
I know. Oh, Sheldon from Big Bang would be disappointed. Anyhow, so yeah. It's just something else to sort of think about that. It's hard. Balance is always hard. I think at every stage of your life, it's all relative, whatever you're dealing with. But trying to find balance is really important.
Yeah. All right. So that's the pre-med path. And probably the least relevant, and I dare say that because there are plenty of pre-meds out there with children, but probably more significant is the medical school years when people are starting to decide to have families as a student in medical school. They want to... I dare say get it over with, but they want to have babies before they start residency because then it's a totally different beast, and we'll talk about that. Mm-hmm. But we went to school, and several of our med student friends and classmates had children, so it's not against
it's not impossible.
It's not impossible to have children. And what I want to talk about...
And be a med student.
And be a... Yes, it's not impossible to have children and be a med student. But there's probably an underlying theme that will continue on from pre-med to through residency and fellowship and attending. And that's support, I think, is huge. And we can't underestimate that part of it. The students that we knew, the classmates that we knew with children had amazing family support from their spouses and family and other people. So, but you'd mentioned
and each other too,
and each other student wise.
Yeah, I don't know if you remember that. Sorry to interrupt you, Ryan, but I don't know if you remember there was sort of almost a little, not a barrier, but there was a difference between the students, the sort of traditional med students who were coming in who were single or maybe in a relationship but weren't settled down in any way, and then those who did have families. And I noticed, and they used to get together, and they really bonded over the fact that they were all in this together, sort of. They were med students who had families and children and their significant others, and everybody would get together and be at these picnics and other events we would have. And it was cool. They would show up with all their kids, but you could just tell that they sort of, they were very much sort of a tribe, if you will. They really,
their own little clique.
Yeah, well, and rightly so, because they were dealing with things that we had no comprehension of, and yeah. And they, as I said before, I mean, I think even more so now, it was just focus.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember asking one of our acquaintances in med school, one of our other classmates, about how she did it all. And she would say that her husband would just take the kids and she would just go to the library and study. And that was what they did. But anyhow, we'll talk more about it. But I just remember that. So some of you out there who might think, oh, I have kids, you know, if I go to med school, is it going to be all like 23 and 24 year olds who can't relate to me at all? Survey says there will probably be there will probably be other, and find that out when you interview, when you look into schools, but there will probably be other students out there who are older and have families and are in the same boat you are.
Yeah, definitely. So lifestyle in medical school, you had mentioned drinking from a fire hose. Mm-hmm. Med school is not easy.
Mm-mm.
So think of your pre-med years, if you've gone through them already or in the middle of them, and multiply it by a factor of what? What would you multiply it by?
Oh, 1,000. I don't know. I mean, it all depends on your preparation is.
For somebody like you who went to McGill, it was probably even.
Well, in the sense that I was used to studying every weekend, yeah. No joke, it was. But it's not so much that. It's, again, it's the speed and the amount of information that you're being asked, required to learn is again, very, very fast. It's just different than anything else.
And it also is a huge change in lifestyle and what you're doing on a day-to-day basis. So again, we always talk about the typical curriculum at a medical school is 2 years of classwork and then 2 years of rotations at the hospital. So non-clinical and then clinical years. And those clinical years are going to be nothing like you've ever done before. So when I did my surgery rotation, you're there before the sun comes up and you leave after the sun comes down. If I had a child at that point, that child probably would be sleeping when I left and would be sleeping when I got home.
Mm-hmm.
And you better have the support, and I hope you do, to handle that, because it's stressful. And it's not just stressful for you because you're missing your child. It's stressful for your spouse who's taking care of that child and feeling abandoned while you're off lollygagging in the hospital.
Hopefully not. I mean, yeah, it could be. It absolutely could be. I mean, and we didn't go through that at that time. So, but yeah, I think, as you said, whether it's your spouse, your significant other, whether it's a parent, whether it's a grandparent, somebody who can watch your child, you know, honestly, even in the first 2 years for most traditional medical school classes, you'll be studying so many hours. It's probably easier in that, you know, you can study and then your break is going to see your baby or, you know, your toddler, however old your children are, maybe they're even older, going to spend a little time with them, have dinner with them, and then you go right back to studying. But as Ryan was talking about, once you get to the ward years, you're in the hospital, and it's, unless you live, I mean, right down the street or something, and you can, sometimes you don't even have that luxury, honestly, but some rotations,
there's a pager on your hip.
Oh, there is. Absolutely. But some rotations you might be able to get away for a little bit just to run home and, or run over, grab something.
Oh, you mean like go shopping during your dermatology rotation?
Hey, that's...
No, that was during residency, yeah. Sorry.
And you know what? That was internship and that was an elective, and don't you start. That was different. We'll get there. Elective is an interesting thing. We should talk about that because that's in med school, that is an important piece of this. But definitely, so third year is probably the most challenging, I would say, for all of us, because remember that when you're in your first and second year, yes, you have class, you have problem solving sessions, you study for the majority of the time, almost all of the time, but you have a lot more control over your schedule and how, not, you know, for example, not every medical school requires you to go to the classes, and some you can sort of go and just study the material yourself if that works better for you. Every med school is a little bit different. you do not have the luxury of owning your time when you're a third year, for the most part.
Yeah.
And so if you're on your surgery rotation, you have to be there before God, and then you're leaving at the very end of the day when the sun is down. Remember, it doesn't end there, right? So you go home and then you pick up your books again, because you need to be prepared for the case tomorrow. You need to be prepared. You need to read what you saw today, read about what you saw today, so that when somebody's
still studying for the shelf exams.
Yep, there's studying for everything. You know, knowing what you're learning on a daily basis. And yes, you always have to be preparing for the shelf, because there are things you won't see, and that shelf is waiting at the end of, it's called something different in DO schools. It's the shelves. And
I forget
shelves. But yeah, so it's a lot. And I have so much admiration and respect for those classmates of ours who had families during that time and were able to power through. And I would imagine maybe if your kids are younger, like when they're infants, it might be easier, maybe, although I don't know. I'm just thinking, because it might be harder to get away from like your 6-year-old versus your 6-month-old, but I think it's probably hard anytime. I think I would have I would have struggled with that. It's family is really important to me and a lot of us, obviously. So you have to have a lot of emotional and I think just a lot of strength in general to be able to power through all that and know that your children are going to be fine if you're really, really busy, and that you'll be back.
These are all new emotions for you.
Well, sure, because I haven't been a parent that long, but yeah. I can now sort of start to relate, at least thinking about it, trying to walk in their shoes.
Yeah.
Yeah, so medical school, I think, it's a beast, but we saw plenty of people do it, again, with support. It's going to be something where you're going to need support, whether it's a babysitter that is living with you, a full-time nanny while you're doing rotations if you don't have a significant other or family member nearby to help. But it's doable. But be prepared.
Plan ahead. Definitely.
Yeah. Let's talk about residency.
Well, and don't forget fourth year, though, because fourth year is very different.
Fourth year is different, but...
No, but I think it's important for people to know, right? Yeah. There's a lot of traveling for residency applications, and then you do have elective time, mm-hmm. so that's a chance that you can actually kind of...
Some people plan to have babies around that time.
Yeah, absolutely. Some people plan to get married in fourth year. It's a big time to sort of check off those family things, those life rites of passage, those moments, that you want to tackle. So I think a lot of our friends got married in fourth year. We were just at a wedding this last weekend for one of our friends, and two of them got married in fourth year. So it's an exciting time, and it is a break. It is a break for a lot of people, because a big part of that year is applying for residency. So you do have gaps and breaks where you can have more time with your family. And that's a sort of a light at the end of the tunnel for once you've been in this craziness of third year. So just to throw that in there, I think it's important.
Yep. Which is why a lot of schools and there's a lot of thinking out there that fourth year is a waste of time and we should cut it out.
Well,
and some schools are trying it.
True. And there are a couple other podcast episodes where you talk about that with folks. But,
lots of people.
Yeah.
All right. You want to talk about residency now?
Residency. So it's funny because you just... we just finished talking about how medical school is a beast.
Residency is even a bigger beast.
It's so funny, though, because when you look back, I mean, I just remember so vividly at the time. I think I've said vividly like 3 times in this podcast already. Sorry, but it's true. I mean, I look back and I just remember these things so well. In college, I remember thinking this is the most insane time in my life. The most insane. I was studying so much. It was so busy. And I was in another country and it was just crazy. And then I'm in med school. I'm like, this is the most crazy. The most crazy. How could anything get more crazy? I'm studying all the time. I'm learning so much. There's so much information. And then you get to residency. And ha 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 ha. So So there's this thing called intern year, which many of you have heard about. And by the way, I should first say that I look back on residency with great fondness. It was the most insane time in my life. It was also the most crazy time in my life by far. I think will always be. And many physicians, if you ask them, will tell you that residency was the most crazy time in their lives.
Which, if you're a medical student or a pre-med student thinking about medicine, don't ask a resident if you should be a physician.
Well, and some people might say, oh, yeah, it's amazing. But I think, again, you're going to be asking that question of a human being who is A, very sleep deprived, B, food deprived,
dehydrated,
dehydrated, probably stressed. A little bit of renal failure. Yes. They've actually done studies on that. It's scary. And very stressed. And what's the difference? So the difference is that you're still acquiring information at lightning speed. You're learning so much. But what we've talked about before in other episodes is that you're learning how to be a doctor. Medical school prepares you for the sort of what it is to be a doctor. It teaches you about what it is to be a doctor. It teaches you the foundation of knowledge you need to practice to be a physician. But actually, the learning how to become, how to practice medicine, learning to be a doctor, is not something that you learn until residency. And yeah. So it's just a different kind of beast.
Yeah. So let's talk about work hours. Mm-hmm. So for, man, how long have we been out?
Well,
the 80 hour work week started right before we started internship and mm-hmm. residency. So this was around 2009, 2008, 2007, somewhere around there. They implemented an 80-hour work week regulation. And that means, it doesn't mean that you're only working 80 hours a week. It means you're working on average 80 hours a week over, I think it's the 4-week period. And so that means 1 week you could be working 100 hours in a week. And that doesn't leave much time for much else if you're planning on sleeping a little bit.
Yep.
And so, again, it takes everything to the next level as far as commitments of your time and how you're dividing up your time. So, obviously, we need to eat. And a lot of people don't factor in the time that it takes to prepare food and eat and everything else. And that could be quality time with your family. Or it could be running through the cafeteria line at the hospital. But you have to eat. You have to go to the bathroom. You have to shower. You have to sleep.
You have at least a bare minimum, because you will become clinically insane if you're up a certain number of hours.
Yeah. You have to obviously work the certain number of hours that you need to work. And then the rest is alone time, family time, whatever else time there is.
And board review.
You have to study. Hopefully you're exercising.
Well, and there are in what we call in-service training examinations. So like when I was in residency, it was called the residency in-service training exam. And so these are yearly exams that you do have to study for and prepare for. And they're in preparation for your board exams after you complete residency and you go and sit for your boards. So there's always something there that can take time. And by the way, I looked up, and at least this reference is saying that the 80-hour rule was instituted in 03, so maybe even a little before we thought, yeah. But it is averaged over 4 weeks. It's 80 hours of weekly limit. You're supposed to have a certain number of hours of rest mm-hmm. after each in-house call. And another key thing in my residency that was a big deal is that, and it's true, it was true all over the country, that you could work 24 hours and then there were 6 additional hours that you could work in which there would be basically a transfer of duties.
So that was non-direct patient care.
Right. So that's intended to be. So let's say you started a shift at 6 a.m. That meant that by 6 a.m. you were done with your clinical duties the following day. Done with your clinical duties, but you had until 12 p.m., another 6 hours, which was taken up by transferring duties. And that means presenting at rounds and where you would basically talk about your admissions and patients you took care of overnight and present them to your attending and the other residents.
Finish notes and check labs.
Finish notes, exactly. All of your charting, everything. But it's not always that perfect. And sometimes there are emergency situations and sometimes you're...
How many times did you fudge your hours you didn't get your program in trouble?
Well, I don't want to throw anybody under the bus. But you're talking though, right? So 24 plus 6 is 30. So it was a 30-hour shift, okay? Yeah. And sometimes I would be there 32 hours, 34 hours.
Sometimes you would stay longer so you could sleep before you drove home.
Yep. Sometimes I was so tired that I would go back to the call room and take a nap. I mean, there were many nights in residency that the thought of even entering a call room was not even a question. I mean, there was no way I was ever going to see the call room. And part of that was that
the call room meaning a place to sleep.
A place to sleep, a place to sit, a place to eat, sleep, etc. And part of that was because, you know, so in my junior year of residency was actually far more intense than my internship ever was. And it was my first year of neurology residency because I did my medicine internship for a year and then I had 3 years of neurology residency. And so as a junior resident running around 24-hour, really 30-hour shift plus, I was seeing consults in the emergency room. I was helping admit patients upstairs. I was responding to emergencies and running all over the hospital and the emergency room, the ICU. It was really, really busy. And
did you know any residents with children?
I did. And so what's amazing is, I mean, that was the most challenging year of my life. It was physically exhausting, you know, psychologically, emotionally taxing, just in every way. And I look back on it with a lot of fondness because it made me so much stronger as an individual. And I take great pride in that and powering through all that. But I did go through some dark times during that year, part of the reason, because I was living away from you. And that was my first year.
You meaning me?
Yes.
Not you listening.
No, correct. Yeah. I was living away from all of you. Ryan and I were separated by geography that year because it was his first assignment, and he was in Dover in Delaware, and I was a very busy junior resident up in Boston, and it was very, very hard because, as Ryan's been saying, that support that you want and need so much, even for yourself, never mind for your family and for children, is so important, and I was actually living with my parents because we didn't want to pay for rent in one place and then have your apartment in another place. It just seems silly. And my parents are living in Brookline. So I lived with them, which was weird as a married person, but did what we had to. But I was really, really blue. I mean, it was a hard, hard time. And then I think, well, I had a hard enough time taking care of myself, mm-hmm. even living with my parents. I mean, people might be like, oh, my God, why is she complaining? But it really just more emotionally, it was just hard. Then I think about, yes, there were friends who had and continue to had children even during that year as a junior resident.
So they were getting pregnant as junior residents.
So one woman I know, she was running around doing that job that I spoke about as a junior resident. You know, she was 7 months pregnant doing that. I mean, unbelievable, unbelievable. And then, yes, went on to have her baby. And had her baby as a junior resident. And yes, you do get some time and you'll get all your vacation time to as your maternity leave. And but I mean, just even things like taking care of all the things you need to do if you want to be a breastfeeding mom, and pumping milk and how to do that. I mean, you're trying to respond to a stroke page and you're hooked up to a pump and you're, I mean, things.
Did you ever have conversations with her about how stressful and hard or whatever it was?
I haven't. I have talked to a good friend who had a baby in her third year of neurology residency. So it was her fourth year total, her last year of residency. And she talked about how challenging it was to.
And that's the easiest year.
Yeah. I mean, in some ways it's every year. Yeah. I don't know that there was an easy year really in my internship. What was easy, the easiest time in my entire residency was the 1 month of derm elective as an intern
where you went shopping.
Yeah. There was one day. Oh my goodness. I'll never live it down where they told me I could go and, you know, just kind of hang out and wait for consults. And it was a light day, but that's very exceedingly rare. And that never happened once I went into my neurology residency. My God. But the point is my friend, she had a baby in the last year of our residency. And even then, I mean, she talked about how it was really challenging to keep up with breastfeeding and doing everything that she really wanted so desperately to do as a mom while also trying to balance these commitments, these major commitments that she had. And that's the other thing that changes, right? So when you go from being a medical student to being an intern, being a resident, you have true responsibility for patients in their lives. And so part of why I wanted to wait until I had completed my residency to have a child is that me personally, I just, I think I am someone who tends to sort of put my needs last. I tend to sort of, and that's part of, by the way, why it took so long for my Crohn's diagnosis to be made, because I was rushing around taking care of my patients and I was just so not in touch with sort of what was going on with me physically. I was too busy, quite frankly.
And we talked about that a lot, or I talked about that a lot with Dr. Drummond about mm-hmm. burnout. And we are either taught, or that's just our personality in general, the physician's personality in general, to put others before ourselves.
Right. And so the thing is, if you have a child at home, you don't really have the luxury of putting, I mean, I guess you can put your patients first if you know somebody is there taking care of your child. But I just didn't, I didn't think I had it in me, honestly, to try to figure out how to do that. And so I have such enormous respect for my colleagues and friends out there who have had children during residency. And it absolutely can be done. I mean, there are people who used to say, well, I'll take my elective to have my baby, or I'll take my elective mm-hmm. as my maternity leave. And that happens. People do that. People wait until they finish residency and then spend, you know, part of their fellowship having, you know, doing their maternity leave or paternity leave. We shouldn't leave out paternity leave, by the way, too. And it's very important. And a lot of residency programs do give paternity leave as well for a couple of weeks, just as they do in a lot of, you know, in attending jobs and throughout the States. A lot of places do provide paternity leave, but and a lot of my friends in my class in residency, the guys, they their wives had children, their significant others, they had children. But I just, it was a tough thing. None of the women in my class had kids. And I think a lot of us shared the same concerns that it's just tough. It's tough, you know?
Yeah. All right. So again, doable, but hard. You need the support.
You need support more than any other stage, I think, in your medical training. You need support.
Your time commitment will be the greatest during residency. Absolutely. Versus medical school and pre-med.
And again, it's that responsibility. As a med student, you're responsible, but you're really not, in a way, because you're helping in major ways and contributing hugely to the team, but it's not your name on the line. It's not you're not the person ultimately responsible for that patient. And even you could argue as a resident, well, it's the attending, but you have a very real responsibility day to day, moment to moment as a resident. Like you said, you carry that pager.
Yeah.
It's just, it's a key difference. So doable. And if you're out there and you already have kids and you're thinking, oh my goodness, they're freaking me out, don't be freaked out, because we, at every single stage of our careers, we have seen people who are having children, about to have children, already have children, who have successfully done this. And it is absolutely doable. It's just, I think, as we've been saying now a few times, it's planning. Figure out beforehand what you're aiming to do and what you're going to be, who these people are that can help you. Yeah. at every stage.
So in the question that Thomas asked, he asked, is there any one specialty that is more lax or family friendly than another? And I think that's how we'll tackle more of the attending side of the question and the story. And there are specialties that are a little bit more lax and require a little bit less of your time. And I think that's something that a lot of people think about and something we've talked about when you're choosing a specialty is think about the lifestyle that you want to have. Do you want to be on call all the time and need to rush into a hospital to perform surgery or to do a stroke protocol or do whatever it may be that you're being called into the hospital for and be pulled away from family possibly? And so I actually pulled up Medscape. We've talked about Medscape before. They have a physician lifestyle report from 2014 that was published in January. And the two most obvious ones on here, ophthalmology and dermatology, are the highest reported happiness, the scales of happiness at home and at work for the ophthalmologist and dermatologist. Almost 70% of them are happy at work, very happy at work. And so that kind of makes sense, right? They're typically office-based jobs. They do surgeries, ophthalmologists do, but they're still practicing in an office.
Yeah.
Dermatology will do procedures as well, but they're practicing in an office. They're probably not taking call. There are ophthalmologists that take call,
but they don't usually have to come into the hospital. They find a way they don't have to.
Yeah.
It's always hard getting an ophthalmologist to come to the ER, I'll tell you.
Because there are very few. Obviously, there are ocular injuries that an ophthalmologist is going to come in and need to see. But
the lifestyles that you're going to see are the ones where you don't have to go into the hospital, be called in at a moment's notice.
Right, like an endocrinologist. I mean, there are a few endocrine sort of emergencies. There are some, but sort of an endocrine emergency would be like diabetic ketoacidosis. That's a situation where a diabetic, their blood sugar is through the roof and it's very, very dangerous, and it's life-threatening. But that's something that a medicine, an internist, a trained medical doctor who has a foundation of internal medicine can handle.
Yeah. So there's a whole gamut of specialties. Obviously, we've talked about a lot of them before, but that's where the happiness is going to come in, and the family friendly side of the house is going to come in. Is, are you practicing in a hospital? Are you in a clinic practice? What is your call responsibility? Are you carrying a pager? Are you going to have to be called in at a moment's notice? And so that's really the ultimate questions there.
Well, but are you saying then that you can't be happy as a physician unless you have that kind of lifestyle?
No, not at all. I'm saying the question is, which one are the family-friendly ones? Mm, and so a lot of people will judge that based on
being
with family. And also being stressed that they have a pager on their hip, and is it going to go off? Are they having the phantom paging feeling? And they're like, oh, is my pager going off? Oh, is it going off?
I remember, actually, that's just funny. Remember, we were in a drugstore. This is like a year ago now. Mm-hmm. And a pager went off, and I was like, oh, my God. And I looked down at my pants, and I was like, where's my pager? And I wasn't even on call. My pager was somewhere else. It was signed out to someone. But it was a pediatrician in line behind us whose pager was going off. And like, oh, PTSD pager. But I think one other thing, so, you know, some of you out there I know are interested in emergency medicine, and some people really like that because it's shift work. Right. And so you know exactly when you're going to be there. You know exactly when you're going to be going home.
Shift work is stressful in and of itself.
Right. So shift work. And that's the thing that, you know, they have these personality tests, and actually in medical school, they offer those to try to help you figure out what type of specialty you want to go into. But I encourage you to really try to really get to know yourself well and figure out what makes you happy, because some people are going to love that adrenaline rush and being the one that can get called in and know that, okay, well, these days of the week, I have protected time with my family, but these days I am absolutely there to, you know, practice and that's my focus and everything. The burnout sometimes can be just that kind of work, and an ER can be very, very physically, emotionally, psychologically very taxing and very stressful. But I think, and then there are things like home call. So that's something else to really understand, that certain specialties have by nature their in-house call. And then others are home call. So you might be called from home to urgently come in. And also it really depends on where you are in the country. So if you're in a very rural area and you're the only doctor around, well, it's a very different life than if you're in a major city and there are 25 or 30 physicians in your department alone and you share a call schedule. It can be just completely, you know, night and day. Maybe, like in my specialty neurology, maybe you're at a hospital where you're a neurologist on call, but you're not going to get called for strokes because they have a stroke specialist who gets called. So there are so many intricacies and things to think about.
There's another big one that I thought you were going to hit on is do you have the support of residents?
Oh, 100%. Yes. And that's something that I learned about recently as an attending, that I came from a system where I was obviously in residency and so had a very team-based we had a team. And then as an attending, I found that, oh, it's just me. And how different is that? And so my team...
There's still a team with nurses and other people.
No. But I don't mean that at all. I mean, there's always, absolutely in healthcare, you always have a team. You can't get... And I say this all the time. You really can't get anything done in medicine and surgery without a team, 100%. What I'm really meaning is sort of the team of doctors working together. Because when you're in residency, depending on the program, I know in mine, you would go out as a team and there would be someone who was handling consults maybe in the ER and someone who was handling consults in the floors, and partly because they're just such big hospitals that we were at. But maybe you'd have several residents and an intern and some med students and then an attending. And then, yes, all the rest of the team, the healthcare providers you're working with. But shrink that down to one. And sometimes that's the case. If you're the consultant and you're the only person, everything is going to come to you. And that can be very challenging. It's a lot of stress and a lot of responsibility, but nobody to also share the the exciting parts with. Let me tell you, if you have a really cool case and you look around and everybody around you is like an ER doctor, an ophthalmologist,
they don't care about your
neurology.
They really
don't care about how you localized a lesion or how you figured out what was going
on. Such a nerd.
Well, you could say that for anybody. If you're an orthopod and you have this really cool case and you turn around and a bunch of neurologists, you don't know what the hell you're talking about or really don't care. I think the major point is when it gets about your question, it behooves you to learn as much as you can about a particular specialty and about where you might be interested in practicing that specialty before you sort of rule it out or decide against it. Because, in terms of lifestyle, if you look at it simply as, oh, okay, well, when am I going to be least in the hospital? Then that's a pretty straightforward answer. But happiness is determined by a lot of factors. And us as physicians, we're all different, and we all have different needs and different things that kind of make us, you know, happy and fulfilled in life. And so that's why the most important thing is figuring out what's going to make you happy.
Yeah. And that goes to his question, how do you balance such an incredible workload with family life? Mm-hmm. And that's so dependent on each person. Mm-hmm. I myself like to be alone and decompress, and Allison loves spending time with family to decompress.
And going running. I like
that. And exercise. We can't stress the importance of exercise and sleep as much as you can. So there's a ton of stuff to help balance. Now, he also asked, have you had any struggles with this?
Wow. And sure.
Running is one of those struggles, right? Finding time to exercise.
Finding time to exercise. Finding time to really prepare food and plan in advance about how, and that seems like a silly thing that you should have figured out when you're 20, but it's not.
You shouldn't be coming home every night saying, what's for dinner?
And we many times have run into, and we'll have periods where, and we still do now, we did before our baby, that we'll have times where we're great and we have everything, every meal, every lunch, every dinner, we have planned out and we have Tupperwares and we're so proud of ourselves. And then there are nights where for a week we're like,
where are we ordering from?
Yeah, like which takeout place tonight? And that's never good for you and it makes you feel kind of crummy.
But
you know what? And Ryan and I have been talking about this. Once your child gets to a certain age, they rely on you to feed them food, real food, right? So, and I mean like chicken and fish and stuff like that, that you know, so the idea of, oh, let's get takeout every night for our baby. No, right? So then it's a matter of, at least in my mind, and every parent out there is different, but, so I'm not trying to sound judgy or anything, but I just mean when our child's old enough, it's going to be important to me that we try to prepare a wholesome meal and blah, blah, blah. So again, it's that planning, that thinking ahead that Ryan always tries to drum into my head. And I'm not always the best at it, but it's important. Yes, I think there are challenges at every single phase, but and as an attending, you're dealing with what we didn't mention too, is the last point in my mind. You're dealing with other things that as a resident you haven't really, which are things like billing and making sure that all of your notes, your clinic notes are done, and making sure that all of your orders are in and you've talked to the insurance companies and you've answered all your patient emails and phone calls and everything else. There are just a lot of different sort of administrative things. Yeah. That you're dealing with. Maybe your teaching duties, you know, I would be teaching a medical student when I was in the hospital working as an attending, and I have to make sure that they got what they needed. So at every stage, there are just different things. Yes, we've had challenges with it, but I think you got to love what you're doing, because you'll find ways to just give it all when you're at work and then be able to give as much as you can at home with your family. Give it all there too. If you're not happy, if you're not fulfilled, then that's not going to be as easy.
Yeah. So Thomas, I hope this podcast and our discussion tonight answers those questions for you. And I know it's an important discussion for many people out there that are interested in medicine, but don't think that it will allow them to have the family that they want. And it's not true. It's hard work, but you can have both. This is probably our longest podcast, but it's an important topic.
Yeah.
We're almost at an hour long. So hopefully you're still listening to us. Next week is session 100, and Allison and I will be talking about some stories that you have emailed into us. We got several stories from listeners like you about their struggles along the way, and and possibly how our podcast has helped them and what they did to overcome those struggles. Because believe it or not, your struggles are likely not unique. There is somebody else out there going through something similar, and hearing what other people are going through and what they did to survive will help you as well. And that's what we hope to do in next week's podcast.
Yeah. We got to break open some champagne too.
Maybe have some bubbly.
Episode 100.
Part of why we do this is knowing that we're reaching people, and we get emails all the time and we get reviews, and we just hit 208 five-star reviews and ratings in iTunes for the US and 7 in Canada now. That's awesome. Mm-hmm. And if you haven't yet, go to medicalschoolhq.net/iTunes. It takes literally 2 minutes to go in and leave a rating and review. And it just brightens our day. Allison and I will say, oh, did you see that review that came in? Because we get an email from it when we get it. And it's just amazing. So I want to thank a couple more people here that left us reviews, 5-star reviews here. GermX something something says, a guiding light. I've been listening to this podcast for the past year, and it has done so much for me. I am more confident, less confused, and more motivated to conquer my dreams. Thank you so much. That's awesome. That's exactly what we do. What we do.
Absolutely.
Not an Angry Bird says 10 out of 10. Would recommend. That's awesome.
I love that name.
Not an Angry Bird.
Yes. And thank you for that review.
Is that copyright infringement?
I don't think so. No. I don't know. I don't know anything about that.
East Coast Pre-Med says, awesome podcast. I love listening every week. That's from one of our Canadian friends up north.
Yay.
Maybe it's from Quebecois.
No, maybe it's from Quebec.
What's Quebecois then?
Quebecois is someone who is from Quebec.
Oh, okay. Now I get it. M. Clark.
I need to take Ryan up to Montreal. Yeah. I will. He needs to visit.
M. Clark, 1988, says, helpful. Great podcast. Would be nice if there was more Canadian information, but otherwise,
yes, and,
awesome.
And we need to just say very briefly that we are working very hard to try to really bring that information to you in an updated way. So we have not forgotten that request. We've had that request a couple times, and we are really trying to get that together for you guys. So keep your eyes open, or keep your ears peeled, eyes peeled.
Eyes peeled. Ears open, eyes peeled, eyes open. Either way. So those 4 5-star reviews, awesome. Thank you. medicalschoolhq.net/iTunes to leave a review. If you haven't subscribed yet, like I mentioned before, in iTunes, in Stitcher, in SoundCloud, you'll get this podcast delivered free to your player of choice every week as we release them. Go to your player of choice, click that subscribe button, and you will get it. What else do you have, Allison? A parting word of wisdom?
Parting word of wisdom. Well, I guess, actually, so episode 100 comes out before Halloween. I was going to say have a safe and happy Halloween, but I'm like way too early. It's only the beginning of October-ish. No, I'll just say my parting advice is good luck to you, whatever stage you are at on your pre-med medical school residency journey toward becoming a physician. And keep plugging.
Yeah. And as always, I hope you join us next time here at the Medical School Headquarters.